الجامعة الافتراضية السورية، كتاب كريمينال لو، القانون الجزائي، باي عماد الدين محمد، الوحدة التعليمية الثالثة، Chapter 3. يغطي هذا التسجيل الشرائح من 21 وحتى النهاية. Slide 21. Recklessness. In RVG and another in 2003, the House of Lords overruled its earlier decision in Caldwell and restored a subjective standard of recklessness to the offense of criminal damage. The House of Lords wanted to emphasize that the decision in RVG and another applied only to the offense of criminal damage, but it seems likely that the subjective standard set down in this authority will be applied to all offenses. This has been confirmed by the Court of Appeal in Attorney General's Reference Number 3 of 2003-2004 to CR App R367, where it was stated that RVG and another established general principles. As a result, we now have one universally applied subjective test of recklessness. Slide 22, للاطلاع, recklessness, the current law. In RVG and another 2003 UK HL 50, Lord Bingham adopted the definition of recklessness proposed by the Law Commission and set out in Clause 18 of the Draft Criminal Code 1989. Lord Bingham stated, "A person acts recklessly within the meaning of Section 1 of the Criminal Damage Act 1971 with respect to a circumstance when he or she is aware of a risk that exists or will exist, a result when he or she is aware of a risk that will occur, and it is in the circumstances known to him unreasonable to take the risk." Slide 23, recklessness, the current law. Although recklessness is subject in requiring awareness of the existence of the risk, there is an objective element to the definition. The separate issue of whether or not the risk is justified or reasonable. This question is assessed by balancing the social utility in taking the risk against the likelihood or severity of harm resulting and questioning whether the risk was one that a reasonable person might take. It is unreasonable to take a risk where the social utility in taking it is outweighed by the harm it is likely to cause. The more severe the harm is likely to be, the higher the social utility in taking the risk must be in order for the risk to be justified. Example: the conduct of a homeowner in entering his or her burning house to save a piece of treasured jewelry is more reckless than that of a lifeguard jumping into a swimming pool to save a person from drowning. The latter act carries more social utility and less danger than the former. The homeowner is taking an unreasonable risk, whereas the lifeguard is not. Slide 24. Recklessness, the development of the law. Prior to 2003, the leading authority on recklessness was Cunningham 1957 to QB 396, in which a subjective standard was applied to the concept of recklessness. The Court of Appeal approved this subjective test of recklessness in Stephenson 1979-1-QB-695. The Court of Appeal confirmed that recklessness was subjectively assessed and Lane L.J. stated, "A man is reckless when he carries out the deliberate act appreciating that there is a risk that damage to property may result from this act. It is, however, not the taking of every risk which could properly be classed as reckless. The risk must be one which it is in all the circumstances unreasonable for him to take." Slide 25 للإطلاع. Recklessness Summary. There are two elements of subjective recklessness. 1. Did the defendant foresee the possibility of the consequence occurring? 2. Was it unjustifiable or unreasonable to take the risk? In the case of Stephenson, 1979, 1 QB 695, the defense argued that due to the defendant having a schizophrenic state, the defendant had not foreseen the possibility of the fire causing damage to property, and therefore he was not subjectively reckless. Whether or not the risk would have been obvious to the reasonable person was not a relevant consideration. The important key question was whether or not the defendant himself actually foresaw the risk of damage to property. Slide 26 للإطلاع Recklessness Summary. The defendant, through no fault of his own, was in a mental condition which might have prevented him from appreciating the risk which would have been obvious to any normal person. The schizophrenia was on the evidence of something which might prevented the idea of danger entering the defendant's mind at all. If that was the fault of the truth of the matter, then the defendant was entitled to be acquitted, according to Lane L.J. This represents the current position of the law because the House of Lords decided in R.V.G. and another 2003 to revert to the law as it stood after Stephenson. It is still important to understand the following cases to be able to assess whether or not the law is satisfactory as it is. Metropolitan Police Commissioner v. Caldwell 1982 1AC 341 and Lawrence 1982 1AC 510. Slide 27 للإطلاع Recklessness Summary. Under Caldwell, there are two different tests or limbs of recklessness. Under the first test or limb, a defendant would be reckless if 1. He does an act which creates an obvious risk of damage, and 2. He does not give any thought to the possibility of there being any such risk. Under the second test or limb, a defendant would be reckless if he recognizes that there is some risk involved and still goes on to do it. The first limb is inadvertent recklessness, often referred to as the objective limb. This definition of recklessness is wider than the test established in Cunningham, as it involves an inadvertent state of mind. Under Caldwell, a defendant would be reckless if he failed to give any thought to the risk of a consequence occurring if that risk would have been obvious to the reasonable person. Slide 28 للإطلاع Recklessness Summary. The second alternative test or limb is one of advertent subjective recklessness. This is similar to that in Cunningham, but crucially, this did not have to be proved under Caldwell, the first objective limb being sufficient. The Caldwell, Cunningham, and Lawrence cases have been strongly criticized by academics, lawyers, and the judiciary. In Brady 2006, EWCA Crim 2413, the Court of Appeal held that in order to be reckless, a defendant only needs to foresee a risk of harm occurring. It is not necessary to prove that the defendant foresaw an obvious and significant risk. Slide 29, Knowledge and Belief. Some criminal offenses require knowledge or belief as the mens rea element. Example, the offense of handling stolen goods under S-22 of the Theft Act 1968 requires the defendant to know or believe that the goods are stolen. The new offenses under the Serious Offenses Act 2007 of encouraging or assisting an offense or offenses require the defendant to believe that one or more offenses will be committed. Slide 30. Negligence. Negligence is not really regarded as a type of mens rea because it does not require consideration of the state of mind of the defendant, which mens rea does. Negligence imposes an objective standard on a defendant and can be satisfied by inadvertence to an obvious risk. The defendant's conduct is judged against the conduct of the hypothetical reasonable person. This means that the characteristics of the defendant are not taken into account when assessing his or her fault. It is not relevant whether a defendant was unable to understand or did not know of the risk. Negligence is a much wider fault element than intention or recklessness. Slide 31. Negligence. A person is negligent when 1. He or she fails to foresee a risk that a reasonable person would have foreseen, or 2. He or she does foresee the risk, but either does not avoid the risk or takes inadequate action, falling below the standard to be expected of the reasonable person. There are various degrees of negligence and culpability. In 1. Negligence is satisfied by inadvertence to a risk that would have been obvious to a reasonable person. The defendant is more culpable in 2, where the defendant is aware of the risk but fails to take the adequate action to prevent it, falling below the objective standard. The more obvious the risk would have been to the reasonable person, the higher the degree of negligence or culpability of the defendant who failed to recognize the risk. Slide 32. Negligence. At common law, negligence is rarely sufficient for criminal liability. The concept of negligence is used more in statutory offenses, although most of these are regulatory in nature. Examples of statutory offenses involving negligence include: هناك خمسة نقاط. 1. Offenses under the Road Traffic Act 1988. 2. Driving without due care and attention, as this offense requires the defendant to drive in a way which falls below the standard of driving to be expected of the reasonable person. Section 3. 3. Causing death by dangerous driving. Section 2. 4. Dangerous driving is defined as falling far below what would be expected of a competent and careful driver, when it would be obvious to a competent and careful driver that driving in such a way would be dangerous. Section 2A. 5. The offense of causing or allowing the death of a child or vulnerable adult. Section 5 of the Domestic Violence, Crime and Victims Act 2004. Slide 33. The relationship between actus reus and mens rea. Both the elements of actus reus and mens rea are inextricably linked in criminal liability. Criminal liability generally depends upon proof of the actus reus of a criminal offense and the corresponding mens rea of that same offense. This general rule is occasionally loosely interpreted and applied. Slide 34. Coincidence of actus reus and mens rea. The principle of coincidence requires that the actus reus and mens rea coincide in time in order for a defendant to be guilty of a criminal offense. This means that the defendant must form the mens rea for the requisite offense at some point during the actus reus of the offense. However, case law demonstrates that the courts are willing to stretch the concept of an act in order to ensure that cases fall within the principle of coincidence. If the actus reus and mens rea do not coincide, no offense will have been committed. Slide 35. Coincidence of actus reus and mens rea. Example: if I pick up a tin of beans in a supermarket, I have the actus reus of theft, as I have appreciated property belonging to another. If once I have put the tin of beans back on the shelf, I then decided to dishonestly to prevent permanently deprive the supermarket. In other words, I form the mens rea of theft. I will not be guilty of any offense. In this example, the actus reus and mens rea occur at different times and no liability arises. However, if after forming the mens rea and whilst continuing to have that mens rea, I then pick up the tin of beans again. In other words, I perform the actus reus of theft. I will be guilty of the theft because the actus reus and mens rea coincide. Slide 36. The doctrine of transferred malice. لإطلاع. Example. You decide to shoot and kill Mr. X. You point your gun at Mr. X and pull the trigger, but you are a poor shot and the bullet misses Mr. X. Instead, it hits and kills Mr. Y. Are you guilty of the murder of Mr. Y? You have performed the actus reus of murder in relation to Mr. Y, but you only had the mens rea in relation to Mr. X, and you did not intend to kill or cause a GBH to Mr. Y. You may not even have seen Mr. Y. You do not have the mens rea of murder in relation to Mr. Y, so you should not be guilty of his murder. However, the law would be absurd and inadequate to allow you to escape a criminal liability for your actions due to your own incompetence. If you intended to kill Mr. X but killed Mr. Y, you should be punished for the consequences of your actions. Slide 37. The doctrine of transferred malice. The doctrine of transferred malice is employed in this scenario. The doctrine of transferred malice provides that the defendant's intention in relation to Mr. X be transferred to the crime committed against Mr. Y. As such, the actus reus of the offense against Mr. Y is matched by the transferred mens rea and the defendant is criminally liable for Mr. Y's murder. The leading authority on the application of the doctrine transferred malice is Latimer, 1986, 17 QBD, 359. Slide 38. Thinking point. للإطلاع. Mrs. D throws a stone intended to hit Mr. X. However, she misses and hits Mr. V, who was standing nearby. Apart from the doctrine of transferred malice, can you think of another basis upon which a conviction for battery could be based? Slide 39. Summary. للإطلاع. Intention is a subjective concept. There are two types of intention. Direct intent and oblique intent. A person has direct intent in relation to a consequence where it is his or her aim or purpose to achieve that consequence. In other words, where he or she desires that consequence. Where a person does not desire the consequence, but appreciates that it is virtually certain to occur as a result of his actions, this appreciation is evidence from which a jury may find that he intended the consequence. Woolen, 1999. This is referred to as oblique intent. Slide 40. Summary. للإطلاع. There is now one subjective test of recklessness from Cunningham, 1957, and RVG, and another, 2003. Subjective recklessness requires two questions to be asked. Did Mrs. D foresee the possibility of the consequence occurring? And two, was it unreasonable to take the risk? هناك سهم. يوضح بداية Subjective Recklessness Cunningham 1957 ثم Objective Recklessness Caldwell 1981 وفي النهاية Subjective Recklessness RVG and another 2003. Slide 41 summary للاطلاع. The actus reus and mens rea of an offense must coincide in time in order for the defendant to be guilty of that offense. The continuing act theory might be employed in order to establish coincidence. Under the doctrine of transferred malice, the defendant's intention in relation to Mr. X can be transferred to Mr. Y, where he commits the actus reus of that same offense in respect of Mr. Y. The doctrine does not apply where the actus reus committed in respect of Mr. Y relates to a different offense. Neither does the doctrine of transferred malice extend to a double transfer of intent. نهاية التسجيل ونهاية Chapter 3. تقدمت مبادرة ضوء بصوت دانا بيرقدار.